Dr. Mimi Benjamin has worked as a family practice physician for 3 decades, the last 10 years in Juneau. She is the medical director and creator of the Bartlett Regional Hospital Hospitalist Program, which started in 2017. Hospitalists are doctors that specialize in taking care of hospital inpatients.
Well, first of all, just introduce yourself and tell me how long you have been in this position and what you do.
Okay. Dr. Mimi Benjamin, I've been in Juneau for 10 years, and in 4 years ago, almost four and a half, I helped form the hospitalist service at Bartlett Regional Hospital and have been the medical director of that and also worked as a hospitalist now for the past 4.5 years.
So the whole world finds ourselves suddenly in a very different paradigm. As a hospitalist, as the, I guess you'd say, the lead doctor
right
at Bartlett Hospital, mm-hmm. What's that like?
Well, because we're small, we didn't have a chief medical officer. And so by default, Dr. Jones as the ER director, Dr. Neihart as the chief of staff, and I had to become part of the incident command team and help with the medical part.
So how does that work, incident command, for you?
So for the medical side, we have divided and conquered the different tasks. So Dr. Jones is very active on the ER side. Dr. Neihart is more the outpatient side, and I am more the inpatient side, but we all work together. So if you can imagine, there's sort of 3 different tasks as I see it. One is trying to keep up on the changes in the treatment, or actually we have no treatment, but how to manage patients with the disease. So that changes weekly. And in the last 3 weeks, we've already seen the recommendations for how to manage patients on ventilators totally change from how it was recommended that they be treated. So every week we're trying to shift our processes. So that's the number one task. And we're all doing that together because there's way too many resources to have to look at to have one person do that. So we've divided and conquered that, and we communicate with each other whenever anyone hears something or finds something.
And how do you stay up on that stuff?
Yeah, so you try to find the sources that have the easiest to read and the most up-to-date information and are the most reliable. So the first place everyone looks, I think, or I do anyway, is the CDC, because they are gathering and collecting all this research for you and making recommendations. Plus, you feel like their recommendations are likely going to be the most accurate and vetted. And then there are some other journals that have taken the lead, the New England Journal, JAMA. There are some excellent resources being put out by other states who have already been hit. So New York City has a lot of information that they're sharing. So there's ER literature and critical care literature, and we're sort of dividing that up and, you know, all trying to just do our best. But there is no way, in my opinion, that one person could do it all. It's just impossible. But the other place where they're gathering and collecting the data is the state. So the state puts, they have a daily meeting. It's either ASHNA or the state of Alaska has a daily meeting at noon.
Yeah, and it seems like they're doing a lot of good stuff.
They are doing excellent work. So Dr. Zink, who is our chief medical officer of the state, is typically on those meetings. And if you've looked at her work, it's kind of spectacular. It's almost unbelievable. She is just always knows the answer. She is really, really fast in her ability to communicate and to think through things. She's sort of the perfect person for the job, really. And so we count on her a lot. She comes on every day and answers questions that we have about lab testing, about what we're doing to come together as a state. So that is a daily thing. I do that every day. I either listen to ASHNA or I listen to the state, who's ever on at noon. And then they also are putting together these things called ECHOs, which are educational meetings that are happening twice a week where physicians from all over the state get on a meeting. We actually are communicating better now than we ever have.
Well, that's really interesting you say that, because you think about it, what it takes to unsilo, right? Yeah. is a pandemic?
Well, it does, and it has unsiloed us. You know, there are upsides to this, and one of the upsides is we're learning incredible lessons. Here at Bartlett, I think it's been unbelievable how hard people are working, every last person, and how hard we're working to communicate with each other so that we're not replicating work. Everyone has just done an amazing job. And it's kind of nonstop working, right? I kind of thought people would peter out and get tired, but really I haven't seen that at all. I imagine if we get a surge, maybe we'll get...
We've talked to Rose about the surge. What are your thoughts about the possible surge?
So here's the problem with almost any question you'll ask me about COVID-19. Nobody knows. And the reason that nobody knows is because we haven't had long enough to study this disease at all. So all of the medications that people are reading about, it takes years to properly study any kind of intervention. And we've had 4 months, I think, since December, right, since the first case. So essentially, we've had such a small amount of time that we have no idea if any of the medicines are actually working. And the small studies that have come out have not been properly done. And they're still trying to figure out one of the studies from China as to whether or not, you know, what their methods were and how they came to the results that they got. It's sort of the same thing with the surge, because if you look at the models, you know, they make these predictions and then they give you a range of what it could really be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they say, well, Alaska will get, you know, I don't know, 500 cases or 1,000 cases. Oh, but the range is, you know, 5,000 or 50, right? And that's because it depends on what each city is doing and who has it. And people who don't have symptoms can have it and spread it.
Do you have any idea how that happens? That's the freakiest thing.
It is freaky. It is really freaky. But think about it this way, like with any disease process, there are going to be people who might have no symptoms and test positive, right? No test is perfect. That's the first thing. And let's face it, too, this test hasn't been out for very long, so we are not even sure how many false negatives there are. We were just talking about this today. So you could get a test when you're not having any symptoms, and it could be positive, and that would be pretty good, right? That you have it and aren't having symptoms. But it could also be negative, and you still could be positive because it's not perfect. So that's why it's so hard to figure out who has it and who doesn't, unless the person is sick. And then you know,
right.
Typically.
But it's still, we think, droplet form, some way the droplets.
Right. And then when someone coughs, then it's aerosolized into the air.
Right.
But the best thing you can do is wash your hands, which, let's face it, we've been saying that from way before, during flu season and other seasons, wash your hands. That's the best strategy. When you wear a mask like we're wearing today, it's really in case you have it. It's not necessarily going to prevent it if someone coughs in your face and has COVID, but if you have it, you're preventing me from getting it, and I'm preventing you from getting it. Because when I talk, stuff, particles are coming out of my mouth and into the air.
Okay.
So that's what the whole, let's all mask up. It's really interesting, too. Something Dr. Zink said, which just isn't getting out of my mind and never will, and it's so frustrating, is she said, you know, after the first case was discovered, if the entire world had gone inside for 2 weeks, it would have been over.
Really?
Right.
Wow.
How are you ever going to do that?
Yeah.
That just keeps kind of going around in my brain. And the problem is we can't make the whole world do that. And certainly even if Juno did that, we can't stop people from coming in from out of town, right? You're seeing some of the little villages trying to do that, saying just don't come here.
Yeah.
And shutting down. And that's their strategy.
Yeah.
But then, if you think about it, when the curve gets to the end, it's still going to be around. So unless those villages stay shut forever, they can still get a case introduced later.
Well, there's also the whole thing about, like, the prison, right?
Yes.
We got the first case there. I mean, now they're staying inside, but they can be spreading it. Like, that's the
like
that's the
wild,
other that's the other side of this sword, right? Same with, like, with any close place, like closed conditions, like the cruise ships.
Cruise ships, the mines, the jail, anywhere where people gather. You're seeing it even down south in some of the churches that have decided to stay open, and then there was a lot of spread in one church. And that's kind of where I'm worried about for Juneau, because I think our city is doing an incredible job of keeping this curve flat because people are paying attention. Clearly, I mean, we're doing great. We've had no deaths. People are behaving, you know, they're following the rules that the state has put out. But if we get one infection in a group, that's where we could really have a problem, because then in that situation we can get a whole bunch of cases all at once. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of our biggest my biggest worry.
It seems like the community is really getting the message, and the CBJ has really gotten behind it like anything.
Yeah. Well, Alaska's gotten the message, and Alaska's doing an amazing job in how they're responding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every state is different, and I think we're in the top 10. I saw some of states that are managing to keep their curve flat.
Oh.
Dr. Zink, again, I just have to give her so much credit, because she really tells it like it is. And I think that people listen to her and respect her, and I think the governor does too, and I think that that's gone a long way in keeping people safe. She's given very, very conservative recommendations, right? She really wants to protect us, and even if it means that, you know, we might have to close down and lose some money or whatever, her main goal is to keep Alaskans safe. And I think she's willing to do just about anything to make that happen, and it is happening, I think.
It seems like we've gotten quite well prepared over the last few weeks as a hospital.
Yes. We are preparing like crazy. We recognize that we might be called upon to do things that we don't normally do at the hospital.
What kinds of things?
Well, I'll start off by saying that the type of lung disease where people end up needing to be on a ventilator does not have very good models, because what they're finding out now, initially they thought that everybody had something called ARDS, acute respiratory distress syndrome, and there are very good models across the country for how to treat that on the ventilator. And over the last 2 weeks, they're now saying that those strategies don't necessarily work like they would in different viral pneumonias. So now they're recommending a different kind of strategy for the ventilator. Typically, we don't keep patients in Juneau who are on ventilators, especially if it's for something like this. If they're sick enough to need that, then we typically will send them to Seattle or Anchorage, where they have more staff and more levels of expertise and more specialists. So we also realize, though, that it would be possible that Anchorage would be full and even Seattle would be full. Although, I'm going to say for the record, I was very scared about Seattle getting full in the surge, and they have done a fabulous job. Seattle is unbelievable in the job that they have done.
How so?
They have kept their curve flat. They instituted the same kind of hunker down rules, even more strict, early on. They started studying hard about the disease before it even came to the States. So they were getting prepared very early on. And then, instead of getting overwhelmed, because they both flattened their curve and they very early canceled all of their elective surgeries, and they only did emergent surgeries, they've actually kept beds open. And that's important for us, because if our sister city, I mean, Seattle's essentially our closest sister city aside from Anchorage. If we were in a sister city of New York City, this would not be the case. And that's what I was really afraid of about 3 weeks ago, was when Seattle looked like they were going to have a surge like New York. We thought, oh no, there goes our referral area. But the exact opposite has happened. And I've been in contact every week with the doctors in Anchorage and the doctors in Seattle just to make sure that this is still the case and they still have beds. And that's really going to help us out if we need it. Yeah, we are very lucky.
Yeah. Is there anything you'd like to add, something I haven't asked you about?
That to me, the most extraordinary thing is the communication that's going around the state, going around Bartlett, the way people have stepped up to the plate from our CEO to everyone on the incident command. And when I say incident command, what happened was as soon as we realized that this was potentially going to be something significant and different and new, we set up a structure in the hospital that you would in a disaster where everybody has their role and reports to somebody else. And so we set that up, Mr. Bill set that up, and that has been incredible to watch people just work as hard as they can possibly work and just all coming together and listening to each other. And that is an extraordinary feat in any organization, especially a hospital where people are all working in silos often. So we have learned a lot from this that we will take into the future.
To end on a note of hope, what would it be?
Yeah, we're about as ready as we can be. And if I was to say one set of thank yous, it would be to Juno for staying inside if you can, and it's clearly working. To all the nurses and doctors and all of the people cleaning the rooms and making our food. Yeah, the administration of the hospital, who have been nothing but positive. Every single day I hear, oh, that's a great idea, or that you did a really good job, or, you know, we appreciate you. So I think that has gone a long way. So I think we will get through it. And then we'll be prepared in case it ever happens again. And we'll be smarter and we'll be a better place, I think.